Episode 13. Hello and welcome to the Leading Chaos Podcast. I am Rhea Windcaller, your host of this weekly podcast where we take chaos head on and make it manageable. Chaos is disorder, confusion, and at its worst, pandemonium. No matter who you are, where you are, or what you do, chaos will appear when you least expect it. So let's get started. Are you ready to lead chaos? Let's do it. On this episode, I'm speaking to Caleb James Delisle, and the topic is hackers. The question is, are they creating chaos or leading chaos? Yes, there are parallel cyberspaces. You could consider the World Wide Web a United Nations in cyberland, where each country and their government watches over our virtual landscape. And you might think that in the age of internet terrorism, having an internal watchdog is a good thing. But citizens seeking privacy beg to differ. If the word hacker sends a shiver up your spine and a sense of insecurity, well, it's time to meet Caleb. He's a hacker and the benevolent dictator of CJDNS, an encrypted internet protocol. Now, I don't know what IPv6 is, internet protocol, encrypted or anything like that, but he makes a pretty good explanation of it and also talks about another alternate internet, which is called Hyperborea. And I do have a link on that to the show notes. There's a ton of links on the show notes to this at leadingchaospodcast.com. What you're going to find out is that hackers are modern-day virtual government watchdogs asking if they, the powers that be, are doing the right thing. And it should be known that not all hackers are benevolent, like Caleb. Some can be malevolent, and we'll be talking about that. There's also something in that alternate universe which might come to mind as I'm speaking now, something known as the dark net, and there's something within that called Tor. Tor is a network that disguises your identity by moving your traffic across different servers, different Tor servers, and it encrypts that traffic so it isn't traced back to you. And anyone who tries to see traffic coming, you know, from your site will see random nodes on the Tor set rather than your computer. And that's from lifehacker.com, that little background on Tor. You know, Tor was set up by hackers as a way to have that anonymity on the internet and be safe from something like the National Security Administration, the NSA, and really primarily for the principle of it. And that's why people are hiding their info on the internet. A lot of hackers like Caleb, because of the principle of the matter of privacy. But some folks do use Tor, which is like the Silk Road on Tor that you might have heard about, where there was trafficking of drugs and child pornography. Not good things in the world to do. So there's a lot going on in these alternate parallel universes within the cyber realm. And Tor is one. The Hyperborea is another one. Caleb will be speaking on that and taking us into his world a little bit, what he's doing. It's an amazing journey. So listen now to our conversation as we are speaking to Caleb via Paris, France. Caleb James Delisle, welcome to the Leading Chaos Podcast.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. We are talking to Caleb all the way from Paris, France right now, and he is working currently at the XWiki. I'm not sure, is that a corporation? It's probably the wrong question for you, Caleb, but what is XWiki?
It's an employee-owned company. It's self-started. So that means we don't have outside investors. It's basically a corporation. What we do is develop things like Wikipedia, the idea of organizing lots of information, but that problem comes up, the need to organize information comes up in in corporations and municipalities. And we do it as open source. So that's free software, open source, you can download it. But more importantly, you have sovereignty over your data when you use XWiki as opposed to using a competitor's product like Microsoft.
Now, if XWiki is like a free software, and you are a software developer, and I want to also say that Caleb, we're going to be speaking to him about the development of the project, which is called CJDNS. But if that is free software and there's no government domain over that, then who is governing XWiki?
Well, there are a few answers to that. The name XWiki is trademarked, so there's a certain amount of governance there. But indeed, if you wanted to take the code base and name it your own thing and make your own XWiki that was not called XWiki, that's legal. That's fine to do. Governance is just on the basis of who actually wants to contribute to it. And the whole open source world revolves around this idea that people come with contributions and then there is a committee. The committee decides what they want to take as contributions and move that into the software. And of course, if this committee doesn't work for the people, then the people can always do what's known as forking, which is to take the software and change the name and make their own and make it better and have their own committee, which does a better job, hopefully.
So there is a bit of governance, and you are relying on your colleagues to do a bit of self-governing. Would that be correct?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a whole science to open source governance. Well, with XWiki, it's the community model, the committee model. With CJDNS, my project, I used the benevolent dictator model, which means that I make all the decisions, but if you don't like it, you can make your own CJDNS, just rename it. And benevolent dictators, as much as they might seem problematic, and they are problematic when you have no other option in a country, for example, because they're very likely to become not benevolent. But in a software project, they usually are very benevolent, especially when you're making technology for geeks, and geeks, they don't take crap from people. If the dictator becomes not benevolent, then the project will be forked and they will go off in their own direction.
Well, I'm assuming you are a benevolent dictator, which seems a little incongruent, benevolent and dictator in the same sentence. How do you come to terms with that? You know, what informs you on your benevolence in the world? Maybe the short question is, how did you get here? How did you get to this point? And you're a U.S. citizen now living in Paris. I'm not sure if you consider yourself an expat. What was the origins of your quest here?
Well, that's me. That's not CJDNS. I suppose I just decided I was going to leave the U.S. and I made a list of countries, and the plan of it made itself over the course of 5 or so years. I found this company, XWiki, that was serious about doing open source, doing the whole open source, not just taking open source from the commons and packaging it to be pretty, but really actually contributing back. And they were based here in France, and it's a good enough country on my list. And I said, well, why not? This is my opportunity. So I basically moved out of my dad's house and went to Paris.
And here you are. So in Paris, this is where the CJDNS project began. Is that correct?
No. CJDNS is a bit of an old project now. It began in 2011. when I was living in Massachusetts, it just didn't have, nobody knew about it because it didn't work. These projects, writing a software project like CJDNS is a bit like writing a book. It's maybe 500 pages of, if you print out the text, it's a 500 page manuscript. So it began in 2011 with a series of discussions I was having with somebody over IRC chat, and we started saying that, well, we need a way for hackers to communicate, a way for people to communicate without the traditional problems that come with anonymity. Which is you have bad actors, they move in, and then the quality of the community goes away. And we wanted to be able to build a community and actually have it be able to start as overlaying the internet and eventually underlay the internet to switch places and to begin actually maintaining the infrastructure.
On that note, let's define what CJDNS is, and I'm going to give you my take on it as a little base, you know, your average citizen geek. You know, I know what an app is, and I know what I have a laptop, and I try to keep my operating system going. But what I understand, and I know you could fill in the holes here, but CJDNS is essentially an alternate internet, and that you get invited onto this platform, this network, and it provides you anonymity from other security forces. It could be the government or something like that. Would that be a correct...
What you described is almost an accurate description of Hyperborea, which is a network that we built for testing and development of CJDNS. Hyperborea, it doesn't have anonymity. You connect to somebody, and you're as anonymous as they keep your identity secret. If you connect to somebody and they don't tell anybody who they've connected to, sure, you're anonymous, but you're not anonymous in the way that traditional anonymity technologies could make you anonymous so that nobody in the world could figure out who you were. And those technologies, they lent themselves to bad actors. So community quality in those communities ended up degrading. One of the original design intentions was to make CJDNS so that it was designed for building community networks, and the emphasis was on community. Now, what is CJDNS itself? It's actually surprisingly little. It's a routing algorithm and protocol, and the routing protocol encrypts your content, which is routed through the network. So on the internet, you have computers, and your computer and my computer, they have to communicate so that we can do a podcast. There are a bunch of computers in the middle of the internet, and they're connected to everybody else's computer. And those computers, they're called routers. And they, when I send a message to you with a little bit of audio content for this podcast, that message has your internet routed through this network of routers using a routing protocol. CJDNS is another routing protocol. So a CJDNS node will send a message to the network of CJDNS routers, and then they will be able to hopefully get it to come out at another CJDNS node, another endpoint. For example, my computer and yours. And as a matter of fact, this conversation we're having now is going through CJDNS because CJDNS is part of the network infrastructure that connects my laptop to the internet.
what would be the value for the average person like myself to be on CJNBS?
You mean to be on Hyperborea? Because again, CJDNS is just a tool. The value of joining a testing network for an average person, there probably isn't any. It's difficult. I mean, we set up Hyperborea to be a network for testing and development of CJDNS, and we had hoped that it would expand and that people would set up wireless access points. And so when you came near to one of those wireless access points, then you would be on Hyperborea because that access point would provide you with only access to Hyperborea because it's easier to provide access to Hyperborea than it is to provide access to the internet. To provide someone with access to the internet means you have to let them use your internet address, which means that there's liability. They might hack into a bank. They might do some piracy, and you would be not held responsible, but you would have to explain that to somebody that, no, this wasn't me. I have Wi-Fi. Somebody accessed my Wi-Fi. And with CJDNS, it's not your IP address. It's their IP address. The IP address, the internet address, is generated when they generate their configuration. It's associated with their cryptographic identity, not with their internet service provider.
And that's part of the concern that many folks like myself have these days, is our identity being taken and used for not a benevolent dictator, but a malevolent dictator, you know, a bad doobie in the world. So I could see where that could be useful.
Yeah, and most of the types of people who do identity theft are they will be using the strong anonymity protocols, the ones where nobody can figure out who you are, because that allows them to do their dirty work without being seen. And that was one of our original design decisions, was that we didn't want to make it easy for that type of person to join our network for two reasons. You know, sure, we are we're nice people and we don't want to help them, but also we're selfish people and we don't want all of that type of person in our community.
That is kind of the growing concern. And when people hear like an alternate network rather than like the classic World Wide Web that most of us are on, we think about that dark side, the network that's being used for selling drugs and porn and, you know, human slavery traffic and stuff like that. But the CJDNS is totally separate from that, and it wouldn't be considered in that realm at all. But I wonder if you get questioned in that way, and if there's concern about it being misconstrued.
No. Mostly people have actually recognized it as being the other dark net, which wasn't exactly what we built it for. We didn't build it to be the alternative to the dark net. We just wanted some way that we and our community could have a network, and it just turned out that idea of having an alternative that was not the internet but also not the dark net, as it were, was a popular idea.
In some ways, I guess, Caleb, you're kind of like the Yoda. You're on the, you know, coming to the light of the Force versus going to the dark side of the Force. Although I know you're not that old as Yoda, but I suppose he's a bit of a benevolent dictator too. Not sure if you've ever gotten that type of a metaphor in your job description.
Well, the metaphor of the Yoda and the Force and the and especially the Matrix and the ability to change things is a very apt metaphor for the hacker, because hackers, I think it's one of the most poorly or most often misdefined terms. Because for me, the definition of a hacker is somebody who identifies a system, be it a computer system, a social system, and comes to understand it, and then is able to make it change its behavior by way of understanding it and using a small amount of effort in the right place.
Mm-hmm. So
in that definition, hacker is a much broader term than computer or somebody who does whatever the Force in the Star Wars or witchcraft or anything like that. It's the whole or actually even inventors of the 19th, 20th, 18th, 17th. You could say that Nikola Tesla was a hacker, that Johann Gutenberg was a hacker because he invented the printing press, which turned the entire world on its head.
Well, I appreciate you giving your definition of a hacker, because I think that does get really twisted around. And most folks see hackers as creating chaos versus really leading chaos and helping the world create a bit of order and sanity. So would you say that hackers should not be feared? Because I don't know if that could go across the board.
Should you fear a hacker? The answer is a definite maybe, because the fact that people are good at changing systems doesn't necessarily imply whether they are changing them for good or bad reasons. When David Rockefeller first started developing Standard Oil, the conglomerate which became Exxon, the most common use for oil was in lamps for lighting. And not long after that, the octane molecule was stabilized by a hacker who saw this ability to use a molecule in an internal combustion engine, and then it culminated in the name that we all know as Henry Ford. But through a series of hackers, this idea of a petroleum-based economy came to exist. And was it good? Well, actually, it was in its time. But this technology has a different ethics than, for example, photovoltaics, which I would argue was also developed by hackers, hackers who wanted to change the way that we receive electricity from centralized power generating plants to decentralized electricity generation, where everybody can own a piece of the generating infrastructure.
So that maybe it has a lot of gray area to it. I mean, obviously, hackers have contributed quite a bit to the world, and you can identify as a hacker. I'm glad you're on the side that is helping those of us, because it does take up a lot of consumes a lot of money and time when people are hacking into systems and we're losing our identities. But getting that's not what this is about at all. And I wonder then, what would you, with that maybe that you mentioned, do you have any advice for the average computer user, to just a tip to think about in terms of managing the backside of their computer for to protect themselves from the not so benevolent hackers of the world? Was there anything you could do?
I would advise to understand the ethics of the technology that you choose to use, because different technology has different ethics. For example, Microsoft Windows has a certain ethics, the ethics of the idea that one company can produce an operating system, a set of computer software, the majority of the software that runs on and runs your computer and the computers of millions. Well, I was not accusing you of using Windows, runs the majority of the PCs in the world, desktop PCs, and that software is not open for study, open for open to be changed. It's not open source, and it might seem odd that you're asking me how do you protect yourself from hackers, and I'm saying don't use closed. But actually, the answer is surprisingly valid because most hackers have their own set of ethics. Even if they are very, very bad people, they will, the ones who are most interested in breaking things, in doing harm, will they as almost a rule seem to gravitate toward toward environments, toward ecosystems which have a harmful set of base ethics. So, and this is one thing that my friend does on his server. He has a little file in a directory in a file folder that nobody else should be able to access. And it says, and it's a little text file, and inside of it, it says, welcome to my server. However you got in, I would appreciate it if you would fix that on your way out. And the implication is that there's no way to stop every security vulnerability. But by being a well-intentioned person, by being good, and by sticking to the environments, the ecosystems which are which have a socially responsible set of ethics, one can avoid the people who are going to be problematic.
Mm-hmm. So that there's a lot that you just said there, and I believe it on one hand, but on the other, a lot of people use Windows, and they are good people. And they use the Windows system because that's a primary tool for business use in the world. And, you know, folks need a job and they have to work somewhere and they have no other choice but to use that operating system. I guess you're kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't. Not too much you could avoid there.
Yeah, the business, big business has terrible ethics. So it's not surprising that they use this kind of technology. It's not surprising either that they have terrible problems with hackers. In my opinion, these entities go hand in hand. The hackers breaking the systems belonging to the businessmen. It's all a little circle of life. They're all friends. They all have more or less the same set of ethics.
Well, that would be kind of a long stretch, though, and you know, it is businessmen and businesswomen, and a lot of small business folks. You know, the cheapest product on the market to get a laptop would be your basic PC versus an Apple product. So sometimes the very small person, you know, I'm not small person, but small business is reliant upon those products. I mean, what else can they do if they can't? You know, they're going to buy the $200 laptop.
Oh, yeah.
So it isn't.
Yeah, my
go ahead.
My laptop is a Windows, came with Windows. The first thing I did was I installed Ubuntu Linux, which is a free operating system. It is a bit inspired by the Apple operating system. And but unlike either Windows or Apple, Ubuntu is actually all free, almost entirely free and open source software. And I sleep better at night because I choose to use free software.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about the Chaos Communication Conference, and that's the 31st conference coming up this December. I think it's December 27th to the 30th. It's a 4-day conference that is held in Germany, and I understand that you will be attending that conference, or maybe I shouldn't say that. I'm not sure if Hackers let out who's attending or not.
I don't worry about this stuff.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about... Go ahead.
It's something that you can never understand it without being there. And some of it is about hacking of computers. Some of it is about hacking food, how to make food automatically, for example, or some of it is about how to make our computers more secure and how to make them more ethical to remove. Even my computer has parts inside of it which are only available under these bad terms, central control. So there's discussion of that. There's discussion of how to make a computer secure against the NSA. I'm not sure if that's possible, but there are people who are trying. There is a floor filled with people who set up tables, and they have their stuff with their friends, then their hackerspaces. Hackerspaces are places where people can come together and where there might be tools that you don't have in your home if you live in an urban area and you don't have, for example, screwdriver soldering technology for replacing physical parts on an electronic device, and they are the center of communities that are based around these around technology. For example, to give you an idea of the playful kind of clever playfulness that goes on at an event like this. Last year they had four-inch plastic flexible tubing running all around the entire building. It's a five-floor building, and they had vacuum cleaners at stations, and they were set to blow air. And they had these end caps on the tubing, and you could put a you could take a plastic bottle that there were water bottles, and you could take a plastic bottle and put a message inside of it and put it inside of the tubing and use the vacuum cleaner to blow it to the next station. It was just a silly physical network that they had built just for the fun of it.
I'd like to thank Caleb James Delisle for speaking with us on this episode. Just so much information, and I am sorry to say that we were losing his audio at that point, and I think it was due on this end. I had a big snowstorm and lost power here for 48 hours. You'd think I live out in, like, I don't know, some kind of mountaintop. Kind of do, but not that bad. Jeez. But anyways, we lost power with Caleb, and that's a bit of a bummer. He was right at the point about speaking on how you could secure yourself and your laptop when you are hooking on to free Wi-Fi. And so I want to follow up on that and do give you some tips. And I have a link on this specifics because it could be a little bit technical, and you really want to make sure that you're following it correctly. So again, thank you to Caleb. And before I go on to that free Wi-Fi and how to manage it. I just want to take a moment to say that if you are liking what you're hearing on the Leading Chaos podcast, and I hope that you are, if you stayed this long, that you take the time to leave a review and rating on iTunes. And there's a link at leadingchaospodcast.com to this show and all the shows, and specifically to iTunes. That will really make a big difference for me to get that feedback and help continue to promote this free resource out there in the world. So do take the time. And if you'd like to get updates when the podcast is airing and what the upcoming show is, or when the show actually goes online, or any other news of note, you could go to leadingchaospodcast.com and find out that. Subscribe to the newsletter. Find out a little bit about my book, which I wrote on my curriculum, which is a response crisis intervention training model. So there's quite a bit there about myself, my crisis intervention curriculum, that piece, a bit of that on how it works to help others lead chaos in terms of managing conflict and specifically violent interactions. So let's get on to that free Wi-Fi now with my dog barking in the distance, if you could hear him. And what you're going to do is, there is a link to lifehacker.com where you could read the full article and really get the specifics and some good photos on what you would see on your actual browser. But the short of it, there's like a 5 steps that you could take. And the first thing you could do, step one, is turn off sharing. And both in Windows and Mac systems, the OS X systems, and in Windows, you have a control panel, and on your Mac you have what's called system preferences. And in both of those, you're going to hunt down the sharing settings and turn those off. Turn off your file and printer sharings. I had to do this recently at a hotel where I went online to the free Wi-Fi, and I look up and I could see this woman's laptop, you know, this name Nancy or something, and like, geez, you know, Louise, is she seeing my laptop? And, you know, not that this person was a bad doobie in the world, but what you're doing is you're setting yourself up as a target for folks to kind of play with that. And it could be as simple as, you know, a young kid with a lot of time at their hands cracking into your laptop. Not a good thing, especially if you're on a business thing. So go and turn off sharing. Number 2, enable your firewall. And you'll find out how to do that if you don't at the podcast website. Number 3, when you are transferring something like a passwords over the internet for credit card transactions, you're doing some kind of online buying, or you are looking at your bank, you want to make sure that on the browser it says https://, then the World Wide Web. So that S is a secure site. So that's really important. That's a little basic there. A big one you could do, especially if you're going to the Chaos Communication Conference, is consider using a VPN, which is a virtual private network. And that's something you could do, a paid for service. There's a way to set up your own. Again, the link will show you how to do that and give you information. One of the things you should know, if you're going to be linking to your home computer or your business computer, if you're on a business trip, is that you do need to have an on computer at home that you can link to. So it could be a little bit involved, but it is doable. So don't be overwhelmed by this. It's a good thing to know how to do it, especially if you're traveling a lot. Number 5, well, it's kind of simple, but turn your Wi-Fi off when you aren't using it, especially if you haven't automated your public Wi-Fi security settings. And there is a way to do that for Windows and also for your OS system. I'm going to talk briefly just about the Mac. I use a MacBook Pro when I'm traveling, and there is an app called Control Plane, and I do have a link on that, and it will do quite a bit of customization for you, so you could turn your firewall on or off when you're sharing or connecting to your VPN. So that's something to think about. Control Plane, it's an app. If you want to just browse for that, check it out. And then if you're on Windows, you're always asked if you're, you know, connected to your home, work, or public. And again, you just want to make sure that you're turning off the file sharing. So get familiarized with your security settings, whether it's on your phone or on your laptop when you're traveling. This isn't too tough. Just go into your folder, go into System Preferences if you're on a Mac, go into your window if you are, your Control Panel if you're on Windows, and go into where it says File Sharing and turn off those systems. Don't be overwhelmed by it. It's doable. If I could do it, anybody could do it. That's for sure. And again, I will have the direct link to lifehacker.com's article on this, which is how to stay safe on public Wi-Fi networks. It's really important in this world of, there's so much going on. You really want to make sure that you're doing it right and correctly and protecting yourself. So thank you for listening to this episode. I really appreciate it. I know it was a little tough on the audio, but what can you say? You know, we had to go across the Atlantic. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. As always, be kind, be safe, and make sure you protect yourself on your Wi-Fi networks. Stay secure. And stay knowledgeable about the internet. Till next time, ciao for now.